This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, a new study to be published in the upcoming May volume of the journal Physiology and Behavior shows that mindfulness training, a practice rooted in ancient meditative traditions, disrupts the development of conditioned behaviors. Now, based on the results, the study's authors suggest that mindfulness training may protect individuals from developing conditioned behaviors. With conditioned behaviors sustaining unhealthy habits like smoking or opioid misuse, the implications of this research are far-reaching and potentially life-saving. We're now joined on the phone by Dr. Adam Hanley from the College of Social Work at the University of Utah to discuss his research and findings. Dr. Adam Hanley, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Really interesting to have you. And we were just noting how we have never before talked about Pavlov's dog on this show in the 8 years that we've done it.
So hard to believe, right?
It is hard to believe. But take us back to our Psychology 101 class and remind us what happened with Pavlov and his slobbery dog.
Yeah, well, so he just noticed that around dinner time, with a little bell, that the dog started salivating. So the dogs learned that the bell meant dinner was coming, so then they would start to drool in anticipation.
Okay, and so Pavlov's point was that we become also conditioned to certain behaviors when we are triggered with the equivalent of a bell. And this has actually led us into some of our addictive behaviors. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's a safe association there, yeah.
And so what are some of these triggers that those who have addictive behaviors, you know, what are they?
Well, they can be really diverse. I mean, obviously, like the sight of the substance or the situation can be a really strong trigger. People associated with the substance or situation, smells, you know, maybe even thoughts or memories can sort of start that automatic behavioral chain.
Well, but let's talk about your study in particular, Dr. Hanley, because this conditioned behavior, that's what you were examining, I think, from reading the report, is that these conditioned behaviors include a whole bunch of things, some that are good, some that are bad. You know, one of them is addictive behaviors, and that's the one that obviously we can have a big impact by pursuing that particular thread. But conditioned behaviors aren't necessarily all bad for us, are they?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of conditioned behaviors make us move in the world pretty efficiently, free up some cognitive space to do kind of the higher order thinking, more creative pursuits. I think the problem sort of emerges is when we get on automatic pilot just go through our routine and don't even think about those routines or maybe how they're impacting our life sort of in the long term or if they're having immediate negative consequences. So really the goal of this study was to try to figure out if we could make people more aware of just themselves in the moment and see if we could kind of disrupt whether they acquire that automatic pilot in response to a trigger.
Well, that's so interesting because our previous interview and guest, we were talking about ordinary lives with extraordinary focus leading to extraordinary creativity.
Huh.
And that's kind of what I just heard you say. Putting focus on things that are conditioned behaviors that we've taken for granted, which sometimes lead to good things, sometimes lead to harmful things, but that by putting extra focus on it, there's a benefit right there, which I think gets us into this mindfulness concept.
Yeah. I wish I would have heard the first spot you guys had.
Well, it was with an artist out of Austin, Texas, and has just released a book, so we kind of do that from time to time.
Yeah.
But I see an interesting intersection there. So what is it that led you from your study into thinking about meditation and scruffy dogs, use your own tagline?
Yeah, so originally, a lot of my research has been focused around the benefits of meditation and mindfulness. And there's an old paper that pretty much theorized that mindfulness could de-automatize behavior. but there really hadn't been an empirical test of that claim. And so I thought, you know, mindfulness has been around and we think it's a pretty good thing, but we haven't actually looked at this automaticity very closely. And so that's where the study came from.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Adam Hanley. He is a research assistant professor at the University of Utah College of Social Work, talking about his research in which you took a group and you divided them into two groups. You trained one group to meditate and the other group listened to excerpts of a book read aloud. Then what happened?
So then we brought them back into the lab, and we had them meditate or had them listen to a compelling section of the Natural History of Selborne, and put them on a little machine that kind of looked like a headband, if you were going skiing, wanted to keep your ears warm, that had a nozzle coming out of the front that was hooked to an air compressor. So when they heard a sound, the air compressor let go a little puff, and they got a little puff of air in the eye. Uh-huh. And so they learned that a sound meant they should blink because they're going to get puffed in the eye. But they weren't always puffed when the sound came. And so we looked at how quickly the participants acquired that conditioned response, that blink in response to the sound, and how often they blinked in response to the sound.
And so those... I was confused by this when I read the study. Mm-hmm. Those who practiced mindfulness, mm-hmm. they didn't have as much of a conditioned response. Is that correct?
That is correct.
It seems to me that if I knew that there was a beep, mm-hmm. and then there was a puff of air, mm-hmm. that it would just make sense to blink, because I don't like air being puffed in my eye.
You're not alone.
Whether or not I'm being mindful about it or not.
Uh-huh.
But... yeah, if you can expand on that a little bit more.
So they weren't. So the blink or the puff didn't always follow the sound. It was a reinforcement rate or a conditioning rate of about 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we think is that the folks were reacting to each sound like a new sound, not kind of carrying the baggage of the last sound into the next moment. So here's a sound. A puff or an air puff may or may not follow, and just being kind of maybe curious about that individual sound instead of just automatically reacting to it.
So that is about being more present. Okay, it's all coming together for me now.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's interesting. Less susceptible to conditioned behavior, which I would think we would all kind of want to attempt to strive for. Conditioned behavior in general is just, like you said, kind of going through life on autopilot.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, and I think when we can step off that automatic pilot, things become a little richer. We're more present and involved in each moment, which, you know, allows us to connect with others and the world around us in a more meaningful way.
And was that studies like this aren't supposed to have intended outcomes, right? You're supposed to see what happens with the research. But having achieved this outcome and these results, what's your sense of that? Is that something that you're excited by or you're disappointed in? Or do you see this? I mean, tell us where it goes from here with what you've discovered.
Yeah, so I'm excited about it. And my collaborator, Dr. Eric Garland, we do a lot of research right now on mindfulness as a treatment for opioid misuse. And so I think we saw this as kind of a first step into look at ways of directly targeting those conditioned behaviors associated with opioid misuse, just to see if, you know, mindfulness could disrupt this conditioning, and now we're looking at ways to more directly apply it to, you know, address this pretty critical public health problem.
And is mindfulness a practice that's in use currently, or is this cutting edge?
And do you mean specifically in respect to opioid misuse treatment?
Yes.
Yes. So so I'm at the Center on Mindfulness and Integrative Health Intervention Development, and we're running multiple federal-funded projects that use mindfulness-based techniques to address opioid misuse and chronic pain. preliminary data looks really good. We just had a paper published suggesting that it does actually decrease opioid misuse and pain after treatment. And now we're looking at more long-term follow-ups in different populations.
Are there certain locations that you're doing this work, the actual mindfulness work with populations? Are those populations in Salt Lake, or are they scattered around the country?
Yeah, so we're doing projects here at the University of Utah. Folks come to the College of Social Work multiple days a week to attend the groups. We're doing projects with Rutgers, with University of Wisconsin-Madison, a variety of places. I'm missing a few right now, but yeah, all over.
That's exciting work.
Yeah.
You know, just on the simplest of levels, I think many of us are able to do some self-talk around mindfulness. And I was just thinking about when we have a meal, there is a bit of a conditioned response to have dessert afterwards, at least for me, not so much for Tim. Mm. But I often have to stop myself and examine and say, do I really want that? Or is it just a conditioned response? Mm-hmm. Am I really satiated? You know, and the same sometimes happens to me. I have to admit, after a long day of work, I go home and I'm conditioned to want a glass of wine or a beer.
Yeah.
And I stop myself then and say, do I really want this, or is this just a conditioned response? So what would you say to those people who are, you know, maybe don't have addiction, but again, it's employing mindfulness?
Right. Well, it really sounds like what you're asking about is just making a choice, mm-hmm. and just using all the information to make the best choice for yourself in that moment. And I really like what you're saying about just being aware of the thoughts, sort of questioning, do I want this? Do I not? And maybe a next step of that is just to kind of zoom into the body and sort of be curious about where kind of that motivation is coming from. If you're hungry, is it a little rumbling in your tummy? Is it some tightness in the chest? And just sort of exploring the interaction between the physical body and the thoughts and the motivation to kind of pursue that behavior.
Well, this is kind of scary because now it's getting into the discussion around free will and whether or not free will really exists, or if we're just a combination of algorithms which are putting together conditioned responses and creating the life that we think we are living with free will.
Yeah.
That's really where you're going.
Oh, it's interesting. Well, I do like the idea of reinforcing what we to a certain degree already know about choice, but reinforcing it with mindfulness. And that provides a really great argument for why we all should practice mindfulness.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it allows us to more skillfully move in the world. If we have more information, we can make better decisions.
I'm really curious about the College of Social Work, and I know this is off track a little bit, but I had no idea that there was a College of Social Work at the University of Utah. Shame on me. I'm sure it's been there forever and ever, and I should know that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
But has it evolved into something that it was, you know, a long time ago, into something that it is today, where you're doing this type of work, which is possibly quite different than it would have been decades ago?
So to put a caveat, I'll try to answer your question, but I'm actually a psychologist, and
yep.
I've only been here for 2 years now. So the world of social work is still relatively new to me. But in our lab, we're pulling EEG, we're pulling psychophysiology data. I think social work is moving in a really interesting place where it's combining these, you know, behavioral intervention strategies with more physiological data, just to dig deeper into kind of, you know, human behavior and human reactions. And I think our center here in the College of Social Work is very unique, just in the scope with which we're examining kind of these changes in these behaviors in people.
Mm, nice. Well, our guest is Dr. Adam Hanley. He's a research assistant professor at the University of Utah College of Social Work. Adam, if someone wants to read your study, is there an easy way to find it?
Well, yes, it's published in the Journal of Physiology and Behavior, and the title is Mindfulness Training Disrupts Pavlovian Conditioning.
Excellent. And that's the May volume. Has it been released yet?
Yes, ma'am.
Published. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And also just give us the title of the center that you're working with to do the work with mindfulness and opioid.
And it's sort of long, but it's the Center on Mindfulness and Integrative Health Intervention Development. Short is CMIND.
And that's housed in the College of Social Work, the University of Utah as well?
It is, yes.
Great.
Excellent. Well, thanks for all this great information. It's always wonderful to hear what's going on at the University of Utah. So thanks for joining us, Adam.
Well, thank you for the time. I enjoyed the conversation.